I see. Of course, I am a naive kid, you know. Kind of, you know, we foodlums, you know.
The foodlums, huh? Yeah. So, have you gotten more penitent now that you're in there?
I don't know. I've gotten a little more tired in the afternoons. I don't know.
Well, actually kind of reminds me of when I was a kid and...
Today is Tremors 2, Aftershock. It's just coming on the television. Anyway, I'm sorry. It reminds you of...
When I was a kid and family vacations... You know, on these long, tedious car trips that were just agony, the best thing to do was just sleep as much as possible and make the time go faster. But don't go to sleep now, because it's now time to run for your pencil and grab your calendar and mark up some events that are coming up. The first event is the... Wednesday, July 17th, the Food Not Bombs rally in San Francisco, my kind of town. Meet at 850 Bryant Street, which is the Hall of Justice, at 12 noon, high noon in San Francisco. And this is a rally to free Robert Norris Kahn, who is currently doing time for having to bring away bagels to homeless people. Yes. They are throwing people in jail for stuff like that. The rally and march will proceed through the Tenderloin, past the farmer's market, and ending up outside of the temporary city hall on McAllister and Van Ness, approximately 1:30. So you Santa Cruzians, hop into your vehicles, jump on your buses, stick out your thumbs and hitchhike, and show up at 850 Bryant Street Wednesday at noon. On Friday is a benefit in support of the City Hall Sleepers protest. This is a protest that's been going on, it was 136 days now outside of City Hall, and protesting the sleeping ban. So there are numerous cases wending their way through our courts challenging this very law. And I heard a rumor this very day about a federal lawsuit in the works for the City Council to sue the City of Santa Cruz for this unconstitutional law, which is such a flagrant abuse of human rights to imagine outlawing sleeping. This is unbelievable. But happening in right here in our town, so the benefit to end the sleeping ban in support of the City Hall Sleepers protest will be at the Pacific Cultural Center, 7 to 11 p.m., folk music by Mark Levy, Carla Faye, and Larry Hildes, as well as Just Kiddin'. And you know, Just Kiddin', they're just kiddin', you know. It's an $8 to $10 sliding scale, and you could call Santa Cruz Food Not Bombs at 425-3345 for more information, or you could contact Sandy or Robert. Make sure you support the Freedom to Feed, Freedom to Sleep, and come by 809 Center Street, Santa Cruz City Hall, any time of the day or night. Bring coffee, donuts, bagels, and maybe a good book to read, because it is a vigil and it goes on all the time. And we need to end this sleeping ban, because it's not right. Just not right. 96.3 FM, Free Radio. This is Becky Johnson. ¶¶
Thank you. down for so long now. And there's no place, there's no place to go but out. Out on the road where the semi-town, baby, to ride on something moving fast. Where the rain and wind don't go so cold, baby, we can build a life and make it last.
Through the city and enjoying the day and listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. What I'm going to play now is a series of interviews done by Richard Edmondson up at San Francisco Liberation Radio. And the first interview is with Bathrobes Pierre himself. So listen in for what comes from the north.
Welcome to Micro Radio in the U.S. I'm Richard Edmondson. On July 1st, 1996, I interviewed Robert Norris Kahn for San Francisco Liberation Radio. Kahn is a political prisoner who presently is in San Francisco County Jail, where he's serving a 60-day sentence for giving food to the poor. Kahn is a member of Food Not Bombs, an activist group which serves hot vegetarian meals to homeless people while organizing demonstrations and advocating for economic and social justice. The group has more than 100 chapters in the U.S. and Canada. Kahn was arrested in 1993 for violating a court injunction against serving food without a permit. Specifically, his act consisted of handing a bagel and a cup of soup to a homeless woman. Since the year 1988, there have been more than 1,000 such arrests of Food Not Bombs members in the city of San Francisco. Kahn's is the only case which has ever been brought to a trial by jury. In 1994, he was convicted after a 5-day trial during which Judge Robert Barkley refused to allow any testimony about hunger or homelessness. Barkley is an out-of-town judge who was brought in to preside at Kahn's trial after not a single judge in the city of San Francisco would agree to hear the case. In May of this year, After a lengthy appeals process, Kahn's attorney introduced a motion that Kahn's sentence be reduced to time served. Again, not a single San Francisco judge would hear the appeal, and Barkley was again given an expense-paid trip to San Francisco to entertain the motion. After an amazing hearing in which even the district attorney appeared in court and argued in favor of sentence reduction, Barkley denied the petition, and Kahn was remanded into custody on June 17th to begin serving his 60 days. Kahn is presently seeking to have Barkley disqualified and the case reopened. The following interview took place over the phone, with Kahn speaking from his new home in F-Pod in San Francisco County Jail Number 8.
This is 93.7 San Francisco Liberation Radio. We have another treat today. We have Food Not Bomb's political prisoner, Robert North Kahn, calling in, and he's on the phone with us now. Robert?
Help, let me out.
It must be really a lot of fun being in jail.
Oh, it's a barrel of monkeys, so to speak.
Especially when the weather is as fine and beautiful as it has been.
Yeah, actually, it was kind of hot yesterday, although we're very insulated in this Bastille-like structure.
Well, maybe we can see if we can do a historic replay of the storming of the Bastille.
Hey, that would be historically appreciated, certainly. Most people in here, as I've mentioned, I guess, in the previous broadcast, or others have mentioned, are previously homeless people who are here on essentially ridiculous drug charges for selling or possessing or conspiracy to sell or possess or whatever you will of marijuana, heroin, cocaine, crack, things of that sort. It's really depressing because people's lives are completely destroyed by these charges. So not only do they have the drugs to contend with, but they have the jail, which is, of course, the major problem.
Yeah, and then they always complain about there's such a shortage of jail space. But then they
obviously such a self-perpetuating political scam that's used to elect politicians, and it's fueled by police desire to maintain bigger police departments through forfeiture settlements, which, of course, was fueled itself by a Supreme Court decision last week that says it's no longer double jeopardy to grab someone's assets in a civil forfeiture proceeding and then go after them criminally, in spite of lower court rulings. Amazing decision, and one that has lots of impact throughout the country. Here,
well, it's just kind of a tightening of the screws on the American people. It just keeps going on and on and on.
It's like an infernal machine, and I guess you can't expect relief from any kind of conventional sources. It's like French government continued to do its thing in the 1780s until it produced the uprisings of 1789. That's optimistic. I have no idea whether we're in a similar situation in the United States. I somehow doubt it. More likely to have a fascist counter-revolution, but nonetheless, one must persist.
Well, to speak quite vulgarly, you wonder how long the American people will continue to bend over and allow themselves to be screwed by their own government. That essentially is what has happened.
Right. Well, I think it's a function of the fact that the people are in an isolated position, and they feel they are alone, and they have to focus on the second job that they have to use to bring in enough money to pay the one-third to one-half of the their income that goes for rent. I mean, it's a cycle. It's an incredible cycle that goes on. But here inside F-Pod on beautiful County Jail 8 here, we have, everybody here is, you get fed your 2,000 calories a day, not particularly appetizing, and there's not really enough of it. But for a big guy like me, hey, there's more than enough, and hopefully I won't get too much bigger in here.
So are you sort of like still feeling hungry even after these meager portions are served out?
Well, not so much that, although you don't expend much energy, although you can work out on the remaining exercise equipment. As you may know, exercise equipment is being removed from prison. Now, Bombs, however, has a
which is very transparently suspicious. I mean, you have to wonder why they would want to cut off media contact, what they're trying to hide.
Oh, I think there's no need to wonder. I mean, what they're hiding is a system of arbitrary abuses which can't really stand the light of day, and it's the less they're questioned about it, the more power they have to do whatever they want to do. They being the people all the way ranging from the deputy on the cell block to the warden in the tower, or the warden in the office to the deputies in the tower, and so forth. I got a blow-by-blow description from one of the inmates here as to how one of the riots started in San Quentin, essentially, he claimed provoked by a guard. Guards apparently they take some pleasure in provoking tensions between inmates, and I've seen some of this here.
And when was this?
This was, it was either 93 or 91, and it might have even been as late as November of 95. I have to refer to my notes again, and it had to do with I think a black guard taunting the Hispanic population with threats and so forth, and then one Hispanic person or one white person responding, and then he was jumped the next day. This is according to a Hispanic person.
Guard was jumped the next day?
Not the guard, no. The prisoner. The guard doesn't get jumped, but the prisoner, instead of the prisoners turning against grievances by the system, they're, of course, turned against each other, which is, you know, an in miniature representation of what really happens in society. We all go after each other and, you know, scuttle around for the little residue crumbs that are left instead of, you know, going after the cake, which is being eaten every day in the EO offices.
Well, being in prison is like, I guess, a lot like being in a pressure cooker. You know, you're locked up, and the steam builds up inside, and I guess in some respects, the guards are often like comparable to the fire underneath the pot that's causing the heat to build up and boil.
Well, not just the guards. The guards are sort of, they get their own kicks out of what they do, and many of them are just people trying to go to their job and, you know, go home to their loved ones and eat and have their meals and so forth. And the problem is the whole system of locking people down tighter and tighter, giving them less and less in terms of opportunities to be human beings and to live their lives in some productive way. And, you know, now, of course, the prisons are supposed to, are reported to become geriatric farms, as this three strikes law, you know, packs the jails and destroys the court system. But I was going to say, on a more positive note, that Foodnet Bombs, at least in my pod, the F pod, all us PUDs here in F pod have many of us have a positive view toward Foodnet Bombs. I've been able to get a few articles that describe Foodnet Bombs into the jail, and I've passed them around a little bit, showing them to people. And guards included all tend to, you know, the idea of jailing people for serving food is stupid. Now all I have to do is get the idea that jailing people for drugs is stupid, and we could have a real revolution on our hands.
Do a lot of the prisoners in the jail there know about Foodnet Bombs, or did they know about them before you passed these articles around?
Don't seem to, really, although some of them do. There are some who actually have used Foodnet Bombs services. Those who've been homeless in San Francisco do. Many of the prisoners here are from Honduras, or, in fact, the majority of the prisoners here are Hispanic-speaking in this particular ward, or this particular cell block area, and they have never heard of Foodnet Bombs, or actually, to be candid with you, I haven't really discussed it much with the Hondurans. I really should. Maybe I can give you more of an update when I talk to you in our next interview.
Well, you were calling today specifically to talk about the need, in your case, for somebody to do some legal work. Would you like to talk about that?
Oh, yeah. I've heard that, I would. I've heard that an attorney or two has been seen doling out gruel, oatmeal gruel, in the morning at my vigil. There's a morning vigil Monday through Friday, urging the mayor, the governor, police department, DA, the jail authorities to release me, and again, I guess to dissolve the injunction that Foodnet Bombs currently suffers under, and to stop the matrix arrests in the Golden Gate Park area throughout the city, which are continuing under our new slick Willie Brown, or whitewash Willie, as I sometimes call him. And one of those gruel servers was an attorney, a guy named John Lee. Hi, John. looking for attorneys to kick in 6 hours of time because I'm looking for an attorney to help with a Barclay disqualification motion. Barclay was my judge. I think he's now retired, is what I've heard. He was the one who decided that 2 months in jail was an apt punishment for serving 13 people rice and bagels, and he would not hear of community service, he would not hear of house arrest as any alternatives, he would not follow the suggestions of the district attorney, who in a very rare appearance argued that I should be released simply forthwith, that I should not have to serve any time, that the whole policies of the city had changed. That was not an accurate statement, really, because the next day Keith McHenry was arrested for the same crime, but then the charges were dropped, and at least some departments, including the district attorney department, are trying to change the policies of the city toward the poor, not with a lot of success in some cases, because we still have the injunction, which was used, as I said, the day after I entered jail on the 17th of July or June to arrest Keith McHenry.
Okay, now explain what would be involved in.
Well, what we need is a person who is. Doesn't have to be an attorney. It could be a person who's paralegal or has had legal training, a law student who wants to research putting together a motion to disqualify Judge Robert Barclay, the Modoc County judge who was called in on my case and who was the judge who sentenced me and who upheld the sentence. We believe he should be disqualified, or I do, and others do too, because he read an ex parte communication, that is to say, a letter directed simply to him, which denounced me and urged him to give me a longer sentence. It was a letter from a former mayor of Santa Cruz, the town that I live in, down to the south, which denounced me as an agitator and a bad guy and an instigator of violence and various other false statements. The point, though, is that the letter was one the judge opened and read thoroughly instead of not reading, as he should have done. In so doing, he prejudiced himself, and when we brought this up to him, said, I'm not prejudiced, we're moving on anyway. And it is getting later in the case. I mean, I'm about...
He said, I'm not prejudiced, you're going to jail anyway.
Yes, but you're going to jail anyway, and all these motions are denied. You know, you're not going to be able to get community service or house arrest or anything else. So, we would like to find someone who's willing to put in the 3 to 6 hours it's necessary, as I hear it estimated, to get such a motion before the court and have another judge review this judge's decision. Now, we don't realistically expect that there's necessarily going to be a positive outcome from this, but one positive outcome will be we want to unseal the letter that this former mayor of Santa Cruz, who now owns the bookshop Santa Cruz in Santa Cruz, his name is Neil Coonerty, that Mr. Coonerty wrote against me can be revealed and made public, and the extent of the prejudicial nature of the letter revealed for everyone to read.
You mean the judge is refusing to release this letter to the public?
We're not able to present it because I, from my lonely jail cell, do not have legal options here. I don't have access to a law library in this jail. I've tried for 2 weeks to get access to a law library. I can't. They have sent in a law student who says he will help me, and we'll see today whether he's doing any help, but frankly, we really need someone outside working on this issue. If anybody is interested, I would encourage them to leave a message on the Food Not Bombs hotline at 985-7087. Any kind of help you can provide really would be of assistance, not simply in my case, which is, of course, an important case, I must say, but also the case of anyone else who is put in jail for serving free food. I think every time we strike a blow to derail this process of harassing poor people, because that's what it is.
Now, wasn't a copy of this letter made available to your attorney?
It was. It was made available to look at briefly at the hearing, but then it was immediately put under court seal.
Which means not even your attorney can have access to it anymore?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure, but I think the problem is that we have to have someone to investigate this and look into it. And that's what's needed at this point. If for some reason attorneys who are normally helpful on Food Not Bombs cases are all occupied with other things and can't do anything, and I'm hoping that there may be an attorney or a paralegal or a person out there with legal training who's willing to kick in 6 hours to deal with the situation. And if you are, I'll be checking that message line twice a day. And incidentally, if anybody wants to tell me anything else or has any other questions about this case or simply wants to give me a message of any sort, you can leave a message at 985-7087 and I'll pick it up and I may be able to respond to you, who knows. Particularly if you're willing to accept a collect call from jail, but even if you're not, we could find some way to maybe get word out to you with a letter or something.
So how would disqualifying Judge Barkley help you now? I mean, you're already in jail and you're already, about a quarter of the way through your sentence.
Well, if Barkley is disqualified, then the matter has to be re-argued. At least the sentence modification hearing has to happen again. And this, again, allows for an opportunity for the media and the public and a new judge to hear this case again, and hopefully an unbiased judge. The very nature of the case is suspect because a visiting judge was called in. Local San Francisco judges have refused to hear this case. They passed it on to somebody who will not face voters in San Francisco, somebody who comes from a very conservative, if not to say redneck part of the state, Modoc County, Alturas, way the hell up in, the northeastern part of the state. And I think that if any local judge had to hear it, and who knows, maybe they'd shift to another visiting judge from, some other county I never heard of. But if another judge has to hear it, at least it puts pressure on the judge again to pay some attention to what the district attorney had to say, which is release this guy and stop this action. And it also generates publicity for the broader issues, such as dissolving the injunction and stopping the matrix arrests, which is much more important even than my individual case.
Yeah, this is a very unusual case insofar as both the district attorney and your attorney, the defense lawyer, agreed on what should be the outcome or the disposition of this case, which was that you should be allowed to go free, having served one day in jail. Essentially, both the district attorney and your attorney, David Beauvais, were asking that the sentence be reduced to time served, and the time already served was one day in jail.
Exactly.
And the judge ruled against both of them.
Right. He not only did that, but he allowed for a 3-week delay before entering a ruling, which made some of us hopeful that he would perhaps be giving it serious consideration. But I don't know that actually happened. I think there's some who cynically suggested that he just wanted to go get orders from whoever was calling the political shots in this case. There's some who think that there is a statewide campaign against Food Not Bombs and against homeless activists generally, involving anti-sitting laws, involving downtown business assessment districts, involving police attacks on Food Not Bombs. I'm not clear that there. I haven't seen any hard evidence of this kind of conspiracy or collusion, but there does seem to be a pattern of the same kind of laws that showed up in Seattle, showed up almost verbatim in Berkeley and Santa Cruz, and probably come out of some think tank in Sacramento.
Well, it's a very unusual case. I've never seen, and I've spent a few years as a reporter and going to trials and so forth, but I have never seen a judge overrule a motion that was agreed upon by both the prosecution and the defense. I've never seen that happen before.
Well, there's another basis for believing that a second judge might take a different stance on this. Although, it must be considered as a long shot because judges don't like to overrule each other. But for my mind, any kind of opportunity to bring this issue before the bar of public opinion and before the bar as well is worth a shot. While I'm in jail here, the issue has some heat to it. It has some substance to it. And once I'm gone from jail, it will, of course, you'll have to await the next victim. And I think we should use our victims while we have them. I'm volunteering, and therefore, let's go for it.
Well, so once again, if anybody would like to volunteer their time as a paralegal, you say it would take about 3 to 6 hours?
That's what I'm told, yeah.
In a law library.
In a law library, and then you'd have to You essentially have to prepare a motion and a set of points and authorities justifying the motion.
Okay, once again, let's give that phone number out if anybody would like to volunteer. The number is?
Hotline, and it's 985-7087. And just leave a message on it after skipping the long message.
985-7087.
Right, 985-7087.
Okay, well, Robert, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, things are going along fine. We're getting an occasional letter from, got one letter from a guy in Toronto, Canada, who wished us all well and wished that I didn't have to be in jail for serving free food, and I appreciate that. The vigil is going on outside the court at every day, I should say outside the Hall of Justice at 850 Bryant Street, and people are invited to come on down there. I guess it's between, I think it's between 8:30 and 10, something like that, every morning, maybe between 8 and 10. Again, you can leave, if you want to volunteer to help with that vigil, you can certainly give a call to the same, 985-7087.
And you're listening to an interview with Robert Norris Kahn, conducted by Richard Edmondson of Liberation Radio. And what you're really listening to is 96.3 FM, Free Radio, Santa Cruz. This is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides from Jail, and I am your hostess, Becky Johnson. And while I'm talking to you, Santa Cruz, I might as well tell you about my TV show on Channel 71, Tuesday nights at 7 o'clock. It's called Club Cruise. Yeah, we're going to be talking about the Citizens Police Review Board this week, so tune in if you have a set. And if you'd like to volunteer for Food Not Bombs locally, call 425-3345 and say, I want to serve bagels too. And you can do it locally here in Santa Cruz. Didn't George Bush declare Food Not Bombs as one of his 1,000 points of light? An all-volunteer organization that uses recycled materials and materials that would have been discarded to feed hungry people? Just a rhetorical question.
FM, Free Radio, Santa Cruz.
Okay, if you're wondering what you want to do Monday night on July 22nd from 7 to 10 p.m., let me recommend the big networking party on the beach in Santa Cruz. This is a potluck at 7 p.m. on Live Oaks Beach, a bonfire at 9 p.m. with music and fun. Bring family, friends to enjoy the summer at the ocean. Folk musicians, poets, and political speeches welcome. Meet in back of the Crow's Nest Restaurant off of 7th Avenue in Santa Cruz. Bring food to share, potluck style, soda, munchies, firewood, in big bold letters here, so especially welcome. Chairs and blankets, dress warmly for wind and sundown. Instruments and instrumentalists are welcome. Members of the Santa Cruz Alliance, Green Party, and grassroots activists will be among the many wonderful progressive groups joining our unique beach party. Folks are coming from San Francisco, from associated with the politics of meaning, Palo Alto, Project on Corporations, Law, and Democracy, and groups from Santa Clara, Watsonville, and Monterey. So call everyone you want to see this summer. Invite everyone you're on the phone with to join us. Mail out cards and do more phoning. Let's make this the political networking party of the year. And the person who's bringing this together is Mike Witte, who moved here last fall from the Detroit area. And as I am a fellow former Detroiter, I would like to welcome Michael to our coven of collective agitators. And listen to Michael also has a radio show on KZSC on Wednesday evenings. I think it's around 5 o'clock.
So listen in up there, too. And come to that big bonfire on the beach. That's July 22nd, down at the end of 7th Avenue by the Crow's Nest Beach. Upcoming also while you're in a calendar-marking mood, is the August 2nd demurrer hearing in Judge Tom Kelly's court, Department 1. And that's a whole bunch of camping ban tickets have been combined together in a court case by three attorneys, local attorney Kate Wells, Berkeley attorney Larry Hildes, and public defender Ed Chun. And they're all going to be presenting a case for the lack of constitutional basis for the city of Santa Cruz camping ban law. This is something that the protesters outside of City Hall have been pointing out to our public officials as they come to and fro on their City Hall activities, reminding them gently but steadfastly that sleeping is not a crime. Okay, I'm going to continue on with Richard Edmondson's Microwave Radio. Now, this is an international radio show that Richard Edmondson puts out, and it's already aired up in San Francisco, and I thought you'd enjoy hearing some parts of it here today. This is Becky Johnson, your guest hostess, trying to fill that big old bathrobe left by Robert Norris as he is cooling his heels in County Jail 8.
And you would appreciate cards and letters from just well-wishers, anyone who would like to write you.
Hey, I'll even accept a letter from Governor Wilson.
Well, it's interesting. Maybe he'll write you. I put a phone call into the governor's office, and all I got was a recording the other day.
Well...
But Amnesty International has faxed a letter to Governor Wilson's office, so we do know that Governor Wilson is aware of your case, not that necessarily that he has any sympathy, but he at least is aware there is a man serving time in jail in the state of California, his state, for the crime of serving food to the poor.
Yes, it's the old lift a ladle, go to jail story, and we hope that that syndrome will eventually be banished from the state and the nation.
He is aware of your case and has not lifted a finger so far to turn it around.
That's true. Well, let's hope that we can get some legal support to force his hand on this. I think that, again, legal support would be one way of changing the situation. People in government, unfortunately, are more impressed by lawyers than they are by the rest of us. So until the rest of us get off our butts and make those changes in the streets, we've got to use the courts as well. So I encourage people to, you know, call your legal friends, ask them if they want to help out, and then leave a message on that 985-7087 hotline.
Okay, Robert, thanks very much for speaking with us. We've been talking to political prisoner Robert Norris Kahn, serving 60 days in jail for having served food to a homeless person in San Francisco. Robert, take care.
Thanks, Richard. Bye-bye.
This is Micro Radio in the U.S. I'm Richard Edmondson. And once again, for anyone wishing to volunteer legal services, contact the San Francisco chapter of Food Not Bombs at area code 415-985-7087. That's 1-800-884-1136. On June 8th, just after signing on to the Republican proposal to ban gay marriages, President Clinton visited San Francisco. A protest that day took place in front of the San Francisco home of California Senator Dianne Feinstein, where Clinton attended a dinner party. In the time we have remaining, we'll play you some of the sound recorded at that demonstration.
Attacking immigrants, Clinton is no friend. He's no friend of any community. He's no friend of transsexuals. He's no friend of transgenders. He's no friend of immigrants. He's no friend of humanity. Gay rights now! Gay rights now! Gay rights now! Human rights now! Human rights now! Human rights now! And we didn't vote for you because we knew that you were not going to represent us. This is a Salvadorian woman, an immigrant, what you call immigrant. I have to tell news for you, Mr. Clinton. I am not an immigrant. My ancestors were here way before you came. We were here. It was the people who looked like you who had to come over, who had to cross the oceans, hundreds of miles and to cross the ocean to get here. Who is the immigrant? Who is the illegal immigrant? No Latino is immigrant in this country. We are, this land is our land. Get out of here. We don't have anything against other races. We are all together here because we have a common cause, a common enemy to fight. And we're going to be fighting you from the smallest person to the largest person in the world living in this country. This is a country that has been built based on the sweat, the suffering, the struggle of everyone who came here from all over the world. So we are not immigrants. There is plenty of room here for everyone to live peacefully.
People of that country, those who have only known living in a revolutionary environment, they are the ones who are going to have to be able to learn to understand and appreciate what the revolution has given them and to be able to carry that on. And it's in their hands that revolution will be turned over at some point or another, and it will be on them whether they are able to sustain that revolution and sustain the country's sovereignty and independence. It's really up to the Cuban people are always the primary movers in this situation, and have always been. It hasn't been just Fidel Castro or the Soviet Union. The Cuban people have been very, very much behind this, and it's amazing when the American reactionaries have never been able to put it over that fact yet, is that the Cuban people support the revolution that they have made for themselves. This is their revolution. Many of the things, good and bad, that have happened in the Cuban revolution have come up from the people. And that's been the amazing thing. Because they were so far away from the Soviet Union, they could get away with doing things their way. And they did things their way. They had a culture that was built in that made it so they couldn't be like the northern Slavic peoples of Eastern Europe. They came from Afro-Cuban tropical people. They were totally different kind of folks. They couldn't live like Russians. And that's what the American people don't realize. The Cuban people are the same as they've always been. A good, intelligent, fun-loving, musical people, ready to be friends. The Cuban people love the American people. They love our music. They love our culture, our jazz, our blues, our rock and roll, our television. They love the technology. They love our country. It's our government that the problems are with, and those who support that policy. But the Cuban people,
they have the consciousness to be aware of the difference between the people and the government.
They have been very, very clear about this. Yeah. There's a clarity about this expression that runs throughout all of the statements that have been made by the Castro government and that people, entertainers and political figures have said all along that we don't have a problem with the American people, is what they'll say. They'll say that the problem is with the American imperialistic relationship that it chooses to maintain with the Cuban people. And
well,
I think that
if all goes well, I'm going to be in Cuba next summer seeing for myself what's going on.
you will.
And a bunch of other folks.
I will guarantee you this. You will be surprised.
Some young people.
Both positively and negatively.
Yes.
You will see the good things. You will see also the contradictions. But you will at least see that they are doing it their way and that they have another way.
Right.
And we may agree with it and we may disagree with it, but at least they're making the effort to make a better society, and that's something we should all be very proud of.
Well, one of the things that we can also be very proud of is the fact that Fidel has granted asylum to some of our best warriors, like Asada Shakur is still in Cuba, having been granted asylum by Fidel Castro, and I'm sure there are many others that are still in Cuba as a result of his giving asylum to our freedom fighters. And that's the other thing that I just wanted to touch on briefly before we bring this interview to a close, and that is that Fidel was welcomed so voraciously and with such delight in Harlem when he was here, because black folks are very aware, African Americans are very aware of how much he did for Southern Africa by sending Cuban troops over to combat South African troops attempting to take over Angola. So I think that we should all be aware that the Cubans have been friends to the peoples of the world, the oppressed
people. The Cuban people of my generation paid a very heavy price in Southern Africa to see to it that Southern Africa would become and would remain free. They did this as a people, seeing it as an act of solidarity with their brothers in Africa. And that's what makes the Cuban people so interesting, is that they have reached beyond themselves to realize that they are a part of a much bigger world, a world where we are all a part of it. You know, and
this global village.
This global village. And it's like one time Harry Belafonte said on a TV show about Cuban music, he says, you know, in Cuba, you don't have to be black to sing a great montuno. You don't have to be white to play a great violin. You don't have to be qualified in anything to enjoy it. All you have to do is love it. And that's what the Cuban people say about us and them. All you have to do, we have to do is love each other. The rest will come.
And on that
and that's
note,
our, and because we're neighbors.
Right. And on that note, we will conclude this interview. You've been listening to Emiliano Echeverria here on Freedom is a Constant Struggle, San Francisco Liberation Radio, 93.7 FM. Thank you very much for being my guest. I'm Ki Lunyasha. Amandla.
Brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen, I got a message for y'all all. Heed the call. There's a train leaving for heaven. And where would you be? Would you rather go to heaven or live in this free? Heaven bound, right here on the earth. Heaven bound. Right here on the earth, heaven bound, from the moment of our birth. Woo-hoo! Oh, yeah. Hey, the fair won't cause you nothing. Christ paid a Calvary. So all them millions of brothers and sisters on the ghetto crosses, the widows of the world. Wow. Come on now, get on board. Come on now, get on board. This train is all about freedom, unity among all the colors. So brothers and sisters, come on board. Come on board. Let's create a world for every boy and girl
where no child is born a minority, but rather a righteous majority of one, similar to each other, sisters and brothers, but like fingerprints and cultures, hey, not quite the same, so viva the difference, and let's get to know each other, hey, border respect. Woo! Heaven bound, heaven bound, right here on earth, right here on earth, right here on earth. Hey, we ain't no minorities, 'cause that means less than. We're gonna be free from the prison of the mind. Come on, get on board. Get on board. Get on board. United we stand. Right on the stuff. I said united we stand. And divided we're stuck. Come on now. All the colors aboard freedom train. Peace with justice. Freedom with equality. Sisters and brothers, born of earth and universe, how small can any child be? Come on, boy. All aboard. Get on board. Get on board. Get on board. Where God is a smile on the face of a child that ain't wasted. Where love is tasted and never wasted. Morning, noon, and night. Freedom training. Freedom now. All aboard. All aboard. Get on board,
get on board, get on board, get on board.
Do you have your ticket? Get on board,
get on board.
On January 19th of this year, Joshua Jojo White was murdered. He was 23 years old. His parents, Daryl Myers and Naomi White, have since set up the Jojo White Youth Fund in collaboration with Global Exchange and are planning a trip to Cuba for many of Jojo's peers and myself, and tax-deductible donations can be made to the Jojo White Youth Fund, care of Global Exchange, 2017 Mission number 303 in San Francisco, 94110. So if you would like to contribute to the fund and help Jojo's friends and other young people go to Cuba next summer, please send your tax-deductible contribution to the Jojo White Youth Fund, care of Global Exchange, 2017 Mission number 303 in San Francisco, 94110. You may also call 415-255-7296 for more information. Coming up very shortly is an interview with Ida Robinson, who was just recently released from a federal prison in Dublin and subsequently from a halfway house. And I got to interview her last Friday, the 15th, and here's it, after she'd only been out a day.
But my feet are still on the ground. It's just the most amazing feeling I could ever think of. It's a dream. It's just a dream, and it hasn't really become a reality to me, but it's here, and I just can't, it's amazing. It's unbelievable.
Well, I'm just delighted to have you in my own home, finally. We've been corresponding for quite a while now, and now tell our listeners how long you were in prison and why.
9 years. In 1972, I hijacked a plane to Cuba along with my co-defendant, and I lived in Cuba a number of years. I was actually, in the words of the government, a fugitive for 16 years. I was born and raised in San Francisco, so so people who grew up with me, I'm Ida McCrae.
Oh, right.
During those years, not until 1987 was I arrested and sent to prison on a 20-year conviction. During this time, I was able to get off 1 year for programming, special programming, which is why I'm out this year instead of next year. But what's important to me is who I've left behind. Who I've left behind are a lot of political sisters who are doing a lot of time, and young women who, because of the war on drugs, who are doing life sentences with no possibilities of parole, old mothers and young women who are just walking circles. Who the prisons are filling up with are women of color. Who the prisons are filling up with are black women, Latino women, who will be down for many, many, many years unless we as a people somehow become activated in helping the women, helping people who are locked up behind these bars. So I just ask people to think of it as if someone you love. Think of it as someone you care for. How would you walk your nest? Just work for 5 years for freedom for these people. Right now, I'm starting, there are two things I'm doing. I've just been out just a matter of a few months, and actually I've only been out 1 day from the halfway house, and that is very liberating. I left the halfway house yesterday morning, and I just wanted to just fly. I felt
tell people what both were like. What was like at federal prison in Dublin and what it was like at the halfway house.
What is happening inside the federal prison is that rapidly, very rapidly, all the programs, educations are is disappearing because of the new wave of bringing back the chain gangs, bringing in more people. They're talking about warehousing our children. They're talking about warehousing our mothers, our men. This is a very serious time that I ask people to really think about it and be aware. They are building prisons left and right. That 33 in the state of California, Chowchilla has the largest women's prison in the world, Who are these people connected to? They're connected to our community. So if they're connected to our community, it's up to us to try to be active in some vocal way to let them know, government, this is not what we want.
You're listening to 96.3 FM Free Radio Santa Cruz, and this is a rebroadcast of Richard Edmondson's show from Liberation Radio in San Francisco.
What it was like living inside Dublin is that it's a big warehouse with nothing. This is already going on 15, 16 years. His sister has been inside,
right. Yeah.
Along with other Lucy Rodriguez, Linda Evans, Marilyn Buck. These are very strong women, very political women, who need to come home, and we need to work towards their release.
Absolutely. Well, I want to thank you so much for giving us your time, and I know it's short, and you have to run. I wish we could talk longer, but we'll do it again soon.
I will be back, and I would like to say, continue to take this to heart, what is happening in this country, and become involved like it really meant you or someone you dearly love. Thank you.
You so
Ida
much.
Robinson.
Ida Robinson.
Thank you.
And lots of luck out here.
Okay, you're listening to Voices of Rebellion, and that was another edition of Freedom is a Constant Struggle. Okay, there you go. You're listening to Voices of Rebellion, and we just finished listening to Kilu's Freedom is a Constant Struggle. And do you have any closing comments you want to make about your show?
Oh, no, that's thank you for listening.
Fantastic, okay. So, now, we have on the air already, as we speak, people from Santa Cruz, and Bob, you're on the air, right?
Yeah, this is Skidmark Bob.
Skidmark Bob, who has been, you've been arrested how many times in a current protest that's happening?
I was arrested once.
Uh-huh.
There's, altogether, there's been, let's see, 12 arrests so far since March 1st, where people have been camping out in violation of the city's camping ban, which anywhere in public or in on or under your vehicle between the hours of 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m.
And this start, I guess a little bit of the background was it seemed to me there was a campground that was existing in Santa Cruz And whatever happened to that?
Well, it was called the River Street Back 40, and there's a River Street shelter, indoor shelter, and also for, God, I think it was like 2 years, there was a campground in the Back 40, which is about maybe an acre and a half.
Oh, hello out there in the broadcasting land. Am I talking on the right one? No, I'm not. Hello, hello out there, Free Radio. Yeah, what's going on here? Free Radio. Back. God only knows what's gonna happen today on the Variety Pack. What's up? You missed me last week. This is, I don't know what my name's gonna be today. Kook! It's the Kooksta on the air today, and I'm going crazy. I got a special guest with me, Liberty! Liberty and Justice for everybody here in Santa Cruz, and, I don't know exactly, what I have in store for everyone today, but, it's gonna be fun. Gonna be really nice, and yeah, this tape deck's going crazy. Anyways, here you go. Listen to this, see how you like it, and whatnot. Free Radio, and I'll be back with you in a minute once I get my head clear.